pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, April 8th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined as always by Dwayne Mullins, a special guest on the line today to start the show, Kira McCormack, former Canadian and Rex program player for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Kira, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, I'm a former Irish international and Whitecaps, just women's program. I never played for Rex.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, no worries.
I was trying to find the right words from a few years ago. But Kira, your story has been really public over the last few months. We've been hearing about it, though, between the soccer circles for a long time. And I think it's time to... We're seeing the progress in the investigation and the allegations. But to start the show today, Kira, well, I would like to for you to be able to explain to us how it all began.
I guess for me, I grew up in Vancouver. I played on the provincial team. I went away to university in the U.S. On scholarship. I went right after university. I was in the U.S. for 5 years at Yale and the University of Connecticut. I went over to Denmark and played professional for a couple of seasons over there and had the chance to play in the Champions League final. And then it was about 2004 was when I came back to Vancouver. And I really wanted to play for Canada, and I kind of felt like being overseas was kind of keeping me out of the loop with that. So I came home and I started training. It was pretty informal at the time. It's always, at least when I was, in Canada playing, the Canadian national team, the women's Whitecaps, and the under-20 national team were kind of all a big training group, so we all knew each other. I trained in that period of time. There was an academy that we were all training out of with younger players as well. And there was a coach, Bob Berta. And so he kind of, 2004 into 2005, he was running a lot of our training. Again, at that age, you're kind of impressionable and you don't really know like what's normal, what's not. But anyways, I for the most part, when I first had him as a coach, I really enjoyed him. He ran really good sessions. And like I said, it was kind of my passion. A lot of the girls I was training with, all of us had kind of given up everything to play soccer, right? And the dream of playing for the national team. And I went back to Denmark in 2006 for half a season. And I came back and at that point, I believe he was the head coach. I played Whitecaps the summer of 2006, and I believe we won the W League that year. And again, we had like all the big stars like Christine Sinclair, Aaron McLeod, Carl Lang, Andrea Neal. We had thousands of people at our games. And anyways, so there was things that went on even with the Whitecaps in like 2005, 2006, and just things like we were expected to drive all over, the Vancouver running, appearances and stuff for the team. We're gung-ho and there kind of starts to hit a point though where you feel like you're getting taken advantage of and you realize you're not getting paid. And in 2005, I believe it was, we started to kind of feel like, that we had sort of a little mini union meeting almost. We tried to organize it because, our leading scorer was driving from Squamish to practice and, so it was costing her money to play for the Whitecaps. And then the men's team, obviously we had friends on the men's team and, we're finding out that they're worse players, making like $1,500 a month or something. And we're at that point, drawing a significant number of fans to the game and we're getting, publicity in the newspaper and all that type of stuff. But yeah, we had these expectations and that was kind of the first time where we started to feel like, we're kind of getting taken advantage of. And basically we kind of had organized a meeting as a team, and this is 2005, I believe. And keep in mind, like, playing for the Whitecaps meant playing for the national team. If you showed well on the Whitecaps, you got a chance with the national team. So it was, you know, we were in the position that we were vulnerable and could get taken advantage of in that type of relationship. And so we had organized this meeting, and basically the day of the meeting, Bob Leonarduzzi, who never came to any of our, you know, we didn't really see him much during the season, came to our practice the night we were supposed to meet. And basically offered us all, you know, like a small little stipend. I think we were like tiered. It was like 125, 300 or 425 a month. But more importantly, it kind of sent the message to us, like, holy crap, like they know what's going on, and we got to be careful. And kind of it shut it all down in terms of us kind of coming together as a group, because at that point we realized, you know, if you kind of get established as a ringleader, that, you know, playing time dropped. And actually the girl that was sort of the ringleader, her playing time did drop. And, you know, again, whether or not that was related, of course, you're picking up all these signals as the situation's going on. So going into 2006/2007, I was invited with another couple of players to train with the residency. So there had been the whole thing in 2006 when Sherolta Nonan and Charmaine Hooper and Christine Latham didn't show up to a game in 2006, because it was when Greg Kerfoot, the owner of the Whitecaps, had infused all this money. And so they basically told all the girls they had to move to Vancouver. And people like Charmaine and Christine and Sherolta lived in other parts of the U.S. And it was obviously a big deal for them to just have to drop everything and move. But they were told they had to do that if they wanted to play for Canada. So there are these power moves kind of going on. And again, as players, you're like helpless. So those girls didn't show up to a game against Newfoundland. It was in Newfoundland against China in August, and basically all of them got dropped from the national team, and they never played for Canada again. So that, again, like, they were significant players at the time, and that, again, like, sent a very clear message, like, what happens if people, like, spoke up. So for me, it moved into 2007. I was a guest player for the residency program. So they were training every day in Vancouver. So, I mean, or twice a day even sometimes. So, I mean, there was a time where we were coming into like 11 training sessions a week. And we're playing, I was playing with the Whitecaps and with the Canadian national team when all the training sessions from like January to April 2007. Anyways, at that point was when I just felt like Bob's behavior just got more and more kind of like, it was just kind of like, it was bullying, and like, I never experienced anything sexually at all. But for me, like, I saw, you know, there was a lot of stuff in it. And again, it tied in with kind of the Whitecaps relationship too with the national team. And again, the same stuff of us having to go around and do all these appearances for free. I saw my younger teammates coming to me telling me, you know, like, we're basically getting told that we're going to get kicked off the U20 team if we don't miss school to come to practice. There's another player that was really struggling in school, again, felt like she had to come to practice. And I was, you know, tutoring her on the side just to help her. And, you know, again, she felt silenced. And anyway, so there was all these different kind of situations that I just knew, like, deep down. Again, I'm like 26, 27, you know, this is the environment you've been in your whole life. You don't know, like, is this what it takes to make the national team, whatever. But it just started feeling very wrong to me. And so basically the tipping point for me, and I talked about it in my blog, that basically I was driving with one of my teammates who was like in the same situation as me. We were playing for Whitecaps and in the national team at that point, you know, at the residency camp. And basically there was a star player coming in. She was told basically she was going to have to sleep in a room the size of a closet and, you know, miss national team practice to show this girl around. And so basically I was in the car with her when Bob just like tore to pieces, because she just didn't like, she kind of, you know, pushed back a little bit on it. And so she pulled over the car, like, to the side of the road, and she's, like, hysterically sobbing. And I just was like, this is just not right. Like, I know all of this is not right, and how we're getting treated is not right. And so, anyways, so I ended up, we had done a clinic with Bob Leonarduzzi the week before, or, like, a couple weeks before, and he was the president of the Whitecaps at the time. So I suggested to my friend, I was like, why don't we just go and talk to him? Because he, you know, he seemed like a nice guy, and, you know, he's obviously, like, in a more of a position of power, and we're totally getting bullied right now. So you know, let's go talk to him. So I organized it with him. We met him. And at this point for me, like, I'd kind of checked out of, like, I'm like, I'm not playing for Whitecaps anymore. And so, but my friend was staying and playing the whole summer. So we met him on the Tuesday. We told him what was going on. We begged him not to, like, give our names, especially for my friend that was staying in town. For me, it didn't matter as much because I knew I was going to write an email the next day and say that I was gone. Anyway, so basically we met him, talked to him, and then begged him not to say anything. He said he wouldn't, like, you know, just don't say that we were the ones doing this, because I, like, Bob was a vindictive guy and like, kind of knew that there would be consequences. And so the next day I wrote an email, basically, like, just from start to finish of, like, all the reasons why I was going to leave and go to Ottawa to play that summer, because I'd sort of just decided that week. I made contact with Ottawa. They said, yeah, for sure, come out. So that was Tuesday. We met with Bob Lanarduzzi. Wednesday, I wrote the big long email to Bob Berarda, Bob Lanarduzzi, explaining why I was leaving. And then on the Friday, I was coaching, and Bob Lanarduzzi called me and told me that he'd met with Bob, and he told him that we had met with him. And so for me, for my friend that was staying in town, like, I knew she was going to be screwed, because, and I just didn't understand why he would, like, you know, why he would tell, you know, and betray our confidence like that. And obviously the other girls, again, you know, they knew that it had happened. And just this culture of, like, fear and not being able to speak up and going to somebody that, again, because you don't know who to go to in those sorts of situations. And so my friend, I went to Ottawa, I had a fantastic summer, and then my friend stayed, and her playing time, you know, significantly dropped from the year before, and she should have been, like, a star player, because all the national team players had left and gone to residency. Anyways, and so basically then for me, I carried on. And then throughout 2007 into 2008, like I said, it's a small group. Like, we all know each other really well. One of my best friends was one of the U20 players. And so, you know, I was kind of heartbroken, because I kind of knew for me, like, by me leaving, you know, by me sort of dropping that bombshell on Bob Berarda, that I'd kind of ended my own national team career with Canada. But I was fine with it, because I'm like, I'm not willing to see people getting treated like this. And I know it's not right. And I had an Irish passport, and I knew I could go and try and play for Ireland. So, anyways, like I said, but it was hard for me, obviously, because, you know, playing for Canada was my first dream and stuff. And so my friend was telling me stuff throughout the year, like, this stuff continued to escalate. And then she was bringing up, like, all the things I brought up in the blog. She was telling me, you know, like, she saw, you know, him in a parking garage of a player at 6 a.m. Or, like, she saw, another player had gotten these inappropriate texts, and that he'd gone into sensitivity training, and there was, like, rules that, you know, he wasn't supposed to be one-on-one with the players anymore. He had an apartment in the building with the girls, which they felt was really inappropriate. So I'm hearing all these things that, to me, I'm like, this is turning really, like, rotten really quickly. And same thing where she's terrified because she's taken the year off of university. She's also been in a very professional environment in university, so she knows, even as a young player, like, what it's supposed to look like. And it just was like, this is just, it just felt like surreal that this was happening at the national team level. And so I was getting all this information. I ended up, we're all talking behind the scenes. And then, long story short, Andrea Neal mentioned it. She was the one that, you know, we were going to, and she'd retired from the national team at that point. And she was the one that tipped off somebody in the CSA that, like, listen, there's some stuff going on here that you guys need to know about. And then it turned into this. Then it was the next thing. Now we're, like, into August 2008, and they were going to the World Cup in, I think it was, like, November 2008. So basically, Andrea said, you know, there's a mediator that they've hired that wants to talk to you, blah, blah, blah. So I was with the national team for Ireland. We were playing Sweden. It was the morning of my birthday in 2008, end of September 2008. So I told everything that I just said, you know, and some more stuff about, you know, all the things that I'd seen the things I'd heard from my friend and all this stuff. And so then, you know, told her everything. And then the next thing, you know, the next day, my friend, like, gives me a frantic call, and she's like, you know, he just pulled me aside at practice and asked me what I knew, because he knows that this investigation's going on. And I'm, again, like, floored. I'm like, how is this guy on the field with the kids still? And of course they're terrified, because, you know, most of them have given up school for the year, and the World Cup's in a month, and, you know, and, like, he's in this power position with them still. So they're terrified. Anyway, so then the next thing that I heard, I got a message saying, you know, that he's part of, you know, he's what basically, again, the message that got passed through to me was that he got let go by the CSA and the Whitecaps. And then the next thing we see is a media release that they mutually parted ways, which obviously for us was like, what the heck? And then the other thing was that Andrea also told me that the mediator had told her that he wasn't going to coach again, that that was one of her recommendations, that he not be in a position of power again. And anyways, and so we were like, okay, well, again, we don't know what proper protocol with any of this is, you know, but we just assumed it's the Whitecaps, it's the CSA, this is going to be handled as it's supposed to be and legally and all that type of stuff. And yeah, and basically, so that was what we had, you know, and that was the main thing for us. Like, we just didn't want him coaching again and having the chance to, you know, affect people in such a negative way that he did with us. And so anyways, then, yeah, then I mean, I continued my career overseas, and then I started hearing from the other girls, like, he's back coaching. And anyway, so then that kind of just carried on, you know, I was overseas playing. I lived in the U.S. for a while. And then I came back to Vancouver, you know, more regularly, like around 2016. And anyways, that's kind of, again, where a couple of us started to meet to, you know, kind of trying to figure out, like, what could we do? And, you know, more people, like, more details came forward about things and whatever. And then, and basically, anyways, the whole thing carried on. And yeah, basically culminated with, and like, again, over the years, like, you know, there's been obviously just within society, there's been like the Penn State scandal, there's been different things going on, and there's been different times where like, I've wanted to say something, but of course it's like terrifying to be in the position to be the one to, you know, be the one to say something. And so, yeah. And I think also too, when you're, you know, I think even for me personally, like, as when you're an athlete playing at that level, like, you're just taught to power through things. Do you know what I mean? And like, you don't really, like, for me, I've kind of been processing a lot of the trauma of it, because it really was, we were so vulnerable. And I mean, like, we had no power, no control. We had this dream, you know, these people totally used it against us to, like, further their own agenda. So anyways, basically I kind of got triggered again with that whole CBC report. Like, I guess at this point, probably like 6 weeks ago. And, I tweeted something like, this is the most overdue, you know, media, because I have friends that played other sports, like other national teams for Canada and stuff. And I know that this is like a widespread issue of like coach, you know, like misconduct and abuse and all that stuff. And I just couldn't believe that like it hadn't been spoken about. And so when that article came through on them, it was a Monday, like, I guess 6 weeks ago now, I just was like, you know, I'm like, thank God they're finally talking about it. And then, you know, and over the years too, like, there's been reporters and things behind the scenes that have asked, and I've told the whole story from start to finish. And they, at the end of it, it's always like, you're not a victim. And I'm like, I know I'm not a victim, but like, you know, like, this is something that needs to be investigated and looked into. And so I just, I read that article by CBC, that CBC, the National, reached out to me because of my tweet saying, would you ask a question to the NSOs if they can properly investigate themselves. So I said, yeah, sure. And I asked that question, you know, can you guys investigate yourselves? And then the next thing, you know, it was on the National on the Friday night. And like, the answers again were like, oh, we've got policies on our website, or, oh, call the police if, you know, tell someone that'll call the police and all this stuff. And anyways, and I just was so angry listening to it. And so then the following Monday, I went to a Whole Foods by my house, and I sat and I just wrote out the whole blog. Like, I wrote out the whole story from start to finish. I tried to just be as like factual as possible with the whole thing. And again, I didn't know if I was going to post it. I was, again, you know, like, terrified, but I wrote it. So I'm like, at least I have it. And I was like, this is the last time I'm ever writing this blog. I'm either posting it or I'm not posting it. And I'm going to try and move on if I don't post it. And so I was walking out of the Whole Foods, and I wanted to go back and get a couple of cookies for the walk home. So I went back and got cookies, and I was standing in line. And this girl was standing behind me kind of looking at me. And so finally she's like, hey, I'm sorry if this is weird, but are you Kira McCormack? And I said, I am. And who are you? And she's like, oh, like, I'm, you know, I'm like 10 years younger than you. I played on the youth national team and the provincial teams, and I'm friends with this person. And I'm like, yeah, I think we're friends on Facebook. And she's like, we are. And anyways, we started chatting, and I'm like, it's so weird running into you. I'm like, I just finished writing this blog, like, about this, you know, about Bob Beretta. And I said, did you ever have him as a coach? And she started to tear up, and she said, Kira, I've been in therapy the last 2 years because of that guy. And I was like, what? And then, you know, he'd bullied her, and she had moved from another place. And anyways, she had her whole story. And that to me was like, I'm a big believer in like a signs and like the universe telling you to do things. And for me, like that was the sign I needed to like publish it. And I felt like, okay, if I'm meant to end up dead in the ditch after doing this, like that's how my life's supposed to end. Like I just need to do this. And so, yeah, I posted the blog the following Monday, and then it's just obviously like you guys have all seen what's happened since. So
yeah, well, since the last,
that's pretty much the best I can.
Yeah, it is the best you could have done, too, I think. And since then, investigations have been reopened. Former teammates of yours have corroborated the story, over 10 of them, 12 at this moment, I believe, and more are coming.
We're at 14.
At 14, there you go. 14. And there are probably more coming as well. And investigations have been reopened. Discord, they've changed a bit their stories, the Whitecaps and the Canadian Soccer Association along the way. How have you...
And Coastal FC as well. FC has also changed.
Where he used to coach recently, right? That was another, I would say, triggering moment where you see him coach with youth again after all of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
And I think it's also, it's important, sorry, to just, another person that actually, I don't know if you know this, because it just happened late on Friday, but our former manager with the Whitecaps came forward on Friday and said that she alerted the Whitecaps multiple times to, you know, things that we had brought up, that, and she saw inappropriate texts that she brought to the Whitecaps. So she also, I mean, it's been a huge person for us to come forward to say, as an adult, as like the one that we trusted in the situation, she tried to protect us and went to the Whitecaps and they did nothing.
Yeah.
So they knew. Like that was a huge thing for us on Friday.
No, the aspect of knowledge, we was never in doubt. You of all people were mentioning it way before it was acknowledged that you were actually whistleblowing this whole affair. And in nowadays, the rules are in such a way that you cannot be vindicated as a whistleblower. And when we look at this entire situation, that's exactly what happened. And there's many, many, many examples of players losing their spot on the national team, losing their dreams, losing their livelihood because of the allegations right here on Bob Berarda. But you mentioned the blog post, Kira, and for me, how did it change how your story, and when I say your story, I mean the story, because it's a story and it's not just about you. You're just one of the example of the multiple of athletes that were affected negatively and had their career cut short for this reason. How did the blog post change other people's perception on the story?
I mean, I think it's just like we've just been silenced for so long. And I think, you know, and obviously there's like an element of fear with all this type of stuff. And so, I mean, I think how the blog post changed things is that, like, you know, everybody knows now what happened. And I think that's obviously, I mean, I think even from like a mental and emotional standpoint for us, like, I think, like, again, you know, I'm still coming to grips with the whole situation, to be honest, in ways that I wasn't even really expecting. And I've, you know, like, again, even what you're saying, like, yeah, I did have my career cut short, like, I kind of moved on from it, and I don't, it's, I mean, like I said, I'm a big believer everything happens for a reason, and I'm not a person to sit and dwell on the negative. But yeah, that's the reality of it. And again, like, it's a choice that I made, you know, to speak up. And that's just the person that I'm at, like, I am and how I was raised. And like, for me, it was not worth playing at a World Cup or Olympics if I had to sit and watch people get treated the way that they were. I think it's kind of been a healing process for a lot of the girls, just to, like, the fact that we feel heard now, which obviously feels good when you felt like silenced for so long. I think also now, I mean, I think there's a huge movement starting where people, because it's not just a Canadian, you know, soccer problem. You know, this is a huge problem across sports. And I mean, I literally have lost my voice because I've been having conversations nonstop for the last 6 weeks with people across the country, you know, both in soccer and youth soccer, that have experienced, like, you know, horrible things, and also in other sports as well. And I think, I think there's just now an awareness and a conversation, and I think a platform for other people, like, within this whole story with Bob Berarda, like, that maybe they've been afraid before to say something, and now, you know, like, they see that, I've thrown myself to the wolves and I'm still standing. And yeah, like, so I think it's just, it's encouraging truth, which I think promotes healing. And I think also, which, you know, that accountability and transparency also promotes change. And I think, you know, I think that's, I mean, obviously for all of us, this is a huge, you know, we all have lives and things going on and jobs and families and all that type of stuff. But it's just, yeah, I think we're all willing to put it aside because we just want to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again to young athletes in Canada that want to, you know, reach the national team level, whether it's soccer or any other sport, whether they're boys or girls or whatever. Like, every athlete deserves to be able to pursue their sport in a healthy and a safe environment. And, you know, we need to change the laws. It's not, I'm so sick of hearing the word policies. Like, we don't need any more policies. Like, we need laws to hold people and organizations accountable if they don't provide that safe space. And I think, you know, obviously we're still in the sort of like, the you know, people are still coming forward with their stories. But for me personally, like, I've already started to, you know, start looking forward in terms of like, what can we do to change things moving forward? Because, you know, I'm like, I won't rest until I know that, you know, my friends' children and my nieces and, you know, that they're all going to be able to play sports. And if they want to pursue it to the highest level, that they'll be able to pursue that passion and not have that passion manipulated and taken advantage of. And you know, yeah, like, because I think it's just been atrocious what's happened to us and happened to other people.
Are you surprised, Kira, by the reaction to the story?
Yeah, like, I mean, to be honest, I literally feel like I hit publish on the blog and I didn't, I mean, I like, I'll give you an example. Like, I literally, my lease ran out March 15th. Like, I didn't, like, I basically asked my friend if I could sleep on her couch for a month because I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I mean, I was terrified. So, yeah, like, to be honest, that's probably been the most surprising part for me, like, just the absolute and overwhelming support, like, that I personally have received and all of us in the stories received. Yeah, maybe I just have a bad view of the human race. I don't know, but yeah, I've been shocked by just, like, literally, it's been so supportive. And again, like, there's a little part of me that's still obviously, you know, it's sort of scary putting yourself into this position, but like, every time somebody says something or I get a message or whatever, like, it's kind of like affirming that, like, I did the right thing by doing it. So yeah, it's been a good part of it for sure.
I'm wondering what you feel is an appropriate outcome of this. Is there something that can happen? You said you don't want to see any more policy, but I'm just curious what you'd like to see as a result of all this.
Well, to be honest, actually, it's funny you asked that because I sort of, you know, those of us that sort of have, you know, behind the scenes with this whole thing, you know, I met with one of the girls this weekend to kind of like map out like what do we want going forward. And I think, you know, I mean, this is what I personally came up with. Like, I want to see change the laws, change the structure and change the culture. Like, you know, from the law perspective, like, I mean, I think if you're a person in the position of like the Whitecaps management and, you know, you're in a duty of care and you have people below you that are vulnerable and you get told this kind of information and it should be reported to the police and you choose to have some kind of a sham investigation that doesn't even talk to the players or the manager or anybody, like, that should be a crime, in my opinion. You know, like, the Penn State guys that covered it up, like, they went to jail. I'm still learning about the laws and stuff in Canada, but I mean, I think anybody involved in covering up a situation like that, like, they're like, the laws need to be changed to hold them accountable. And, you know, I think if people and organizations are held accountable, like, that's where big change starts to happen. I think the structure needs to change. I think it's so wrong in Canada that the Whitecaps as a private organization have somehow like inserted themselves into the, you know, the pathway with the National Sport Organization, you know, because at least with the National Sport Organization, they're funded by the government. They're answerable to the people. A private business isn't answerable to anybody. And I think that that's part of why we got put into such a vulnerable position. So that's a huge piece of it. I also think another part of it is that, you know, coaches, it's very Catholic church, like, in terms of how it is with the coaches right now. And I think, you know, like, one of the things in the CSA, one of their statements that really struck me was like, we found out about whatever, we did an investigation and we parted ways with him. And it's like, you got to the national body that like is in charge of the coaching accreditation. And then you're basically admitting that, like, because of some sort of behavior, you've, you know, let him go or parted ways with him, or whatever, you know, information that was gleaned from this quote-unquote investigation, and you just let him back into the community without any parents or anybody knowing what they did. And I mean, like, that, again, it's just like that's got to be changed. And it's got to be, you know, if I go to a game on the weekend and I go, you know, 2 foot side foot tackle someone and swear at the ref and whatever, like, I get a red card, I'm in front of a disciplinary hearing, there's protocol, it goes on my record as a player. And, you know, if whatever team wanted to look up my, like, disciplinary history, they could see it. But yet these coaches can get let go for misconduct right up to the national team level and just be let go and put back into the system without players knowing. And, like, that's so wrong to me. And, like, that needs to change. And I mean, I think in this situation, I think I speak for everybody when I say that, like, you know, we want Bob permanently banned from coaching, like period, you know. And then I think, you know, the other part of it as well is changing the culture. Like, everybody's been saying to me, like, oh, you're so brave and so courageous for speaking up. And, you know, it should not be brave and courageous to speak up. Like, that should just be the norm. Like, it should be, you see something that's wrong and, like, you stand up and you say something. And, you know, like, again, just the pure level of people that knew this story across the country and didn't do anything about it. Like, you know, it's, we got to change the culture, and we've got to be putting, like, athletes' health and well-being at the forefront. And, you know, we have to be taking responsibility. Like, everybody saw him, you know, that were, you know, in Vancouver, that, like, directly knew the situation, saw him coaching week in and week out, and nobody did anything. And so, yeah, like, I mean, it almost makes me cringe when people say, like, it's brave and courageous, because, like, I really want to live in a society that, like, what I did is just normal behavior and not brave and courageous. And again, that we change the culture so that the athletes are not these, you know, vulnerable people within the situation, and that they have power within it. And so, yeah, that's to me what I hope comes out of all this. And obviously, like, I think we're all gunning very hard for, like, a really full, in-depth investigation into what happened in 2008. You know, whether that comes through, you know, legal means or whatever way it happens, but, you know, like, an absolute proper investigation of everybody in the situation and the people that, you know, acted, you know, illegally or whatever, that they're held accountable, because, like, literally lives were destroyed over this, and people, you know, there's people still in therapy over the things that they experienced, and, like, that's not right.
In closing, Kira, first of all, we thank you very much for your time, for your openness today. I wonder, Kira, and this might be one of the, as well, the consequences of all of this, but if you can speak for you or for anyone else, how does this whole story and extremely terrible treatment of players affect the players' relationship with the game itself? I'm wondering, to this day, how do you feel about soccer?
No, that's actually a really good question. I mean, I think for me, like, I was so passionate about, like, I mean, I still am, like, my whole, I mean, even the business that I've started is basically, I'm helping players across North America, you know, get, and I'm focused on Canada right now, but get scholarships and get to the next level, because, you know, it's almost like a therapy, you know, for me, in terms of, you know, really wanting to be able to, like, give the players the power. And I think the university pathway gives that to players. And so, so for me, like, I've tried to, like, again, like I said, I'm a big believer in taking negative situations and trying to turn them into something positive. So, I mean, I've kind of built a whole, you know, business basically in creating pathways for players to give them the power in the situation and the ability to put themselves in the best environment possible for them to grow as people and as players. But I know for me, like, I mean, I've had this weird relationship with soccer ever since all of this, because I think it's, I mean, like, I feel like I had my heart broken over this, and it's really hard when, you know, that's been your social life, that's been your, you know, athletic life, that's been, like, everything to do with you has been being a player, and then to kind of have this sort of, like, scar and trauma to the whole thing. So I think, honestly, like, it's just made me have this very uneasy relationship with soccer, even though, like, I've continued on to coach and be involved in the games in different capacities. But yeah, so I mean, and I think a lot of the, you know, people say, like, why are there no females involved in soccer? Well, like, I mean, you look at this type of an experience, and why would anybody want to have anything to do with something that, like, reminds them of, you know, basically a situation that they were abused in, you know? And so I think this is starting the healing process for a lot of us. Like, I know for me, I feel maybe motivated to go back out and coach again, where I've kind of avoided that part of the game because it's been a painful thing for me. But yeah, like I said, I think the story coming out, I think it's been healing for a lot of people. So like I said, for me, it's been sort of a bit of a rocky road trying to figure out emotionally, like, you know, soccer and how it fits into what I want to do moving forward. But, it's totally my passion. And I think I'm personally feeling like it's starting to come back, now that I feel like we kind of have a voice with all this. And yeah, so we'll sort of see where things go moving forward.
Kira McCormack, thank you very much for your time today. You can read the Kira's post on the link that will be in the description below of this podcast, and we truly suggest that you take the time it does take to read the entire thing. It's eye-opening, it's shocking, and it makes you realize that life isn't always as it seems. It's always a bit darker, and we always have to be careful. Kira, thank you for your time today, and we hope that the next time we talk, it's about soccer and about the new project that you have regarding positivity and the world of soccer. We'll be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
We're back on Soccer Today. Kevin Laramie joined by Dwayne Rones. Again, we want to thank Kira McCormack for taking the time to talk to us and to really go in depth into the story and the allegations and what to do for the future. Dwayne, you know, there's no point of talking about MLS games of the weekend. There's no point of talking about anything else. I think we should leave this show as it is, and it's the Kira story.
Yeah, look, I mean, where do you go from there, right? Obviously, you mentioned the blog post. You should take the time to read it. But the only thing I'll say is this was known in Canadian soccer circles, and I wrote a post on Canadian Soccer News last week sort of feeling guilty about the fact that I didn't chase this a little bit harder back in the day. But it is very difficult to talk about, but it's important to talk about. So we thank you, Ryan, and like I said, that's go read that post if you haven't yet, and hope that the world changes soon.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Bullies are never, never okay, and in any walk of life, any world, or any walk of work, anywhere, no one should be taken advantage of when they're just trying to realize their dream. And especially when they're in a position that you have authority over them and that you can dangle that carrot and trying to make that player do almost everything you want for that carrot, which is playing time or playing for the national team or whichever it is. It'd be that grade A if you're a teacher or, yeah, it's always wrong. And I think there's never enough of examples of stories like this to make sure that, you know, we keep ourselves accountable. And I think we have to be honest here. We're all included in this. We should have been talking about this a long time ago. We should have listened and we should have acted when it was time. Not a lot of people did. Does it make it better now that it's 11 years later and things are being done about it? No. Too little, too late. But what can we do? Well, we can't change of how we actually acted on it, but we can damn well make sure that we do our best that it doesn't happen again. I think it starts with the parents. It starts with the kids. If you're a player at 14 years old, 16 years old, you're on the cusp of the national team, you're on the cusp of the first team of your academy, and you see glimpses of treatment like this, if you are the parent and your kid tells you, I don't like the way my coach is talking to me, it feels weird, he's threatening me with, please listen and don't disregard. Listen and believe. It's not about believing. It's just listen to your kids. They'll tell you. And if they don't, well, if you see a signal, if you see a sign, please act on it. We've had enough bullies in the world of sports. And we have enough bullies in the world of coaching in sports. And I think we're better than this as a society, no?
No, we should be anyway. But yeah, thanks again to Kira, though. That was something that we all should listen to. And, you know, I hope we did her justice today.
I hope so, too. And by the way, if you like the interview, make sure you share it, retweet it. We want to get the story heard as much as possible. Follow Kira as well at Kira McCormack. You can follow Dwayne at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larmé. We'll be back tomorrow with more on the Canadian women's national team with their victory against England. We'll review the weekend of week 5 in Major League Soccer. We'll do this tomorrow on Tuesday, and we'll set the table for tomorrow night's MLS games. But until then, as always, for Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Larmé, we do thank Kira McCormack for her time today. But until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.